This is The Guardian.
I'm Noor Haidar, coming to you from Gadigal land. And this is the full story.
And it is, of course, a real pleasure for me to be here today to talk about
leaked internal documents showing that it's cancelled or delayed projects aimed at cutting emissions at its Australian operations. Today, Chief Investigations Correspondent for Guardian Australia, Christopher Norse, on what's inside the BHP files.
Full Story is supported by AMP Super. There are moments in life where everything shifts. A new job, a new home, a new direction. But those same moments can also shape your future. AMP calls these super moments. Times to check in on your super. And with 24/7 digital financial advice, AMP Super helps you make more confident decisions as your situation changes. Search AMP Super Moments to find out more. AMP Super. Built for life's super moments. AMP Super, issued by NM Superannuation Proprietary Limited. See PDS and TMD on amp.com.au and consider what's right for you.
Chris, welcome back to Full Story.
Thanks so much for having me.
This is a mammoth investigation that you've been working on into the world's largest mining company, BHP. How much work went into getting to this stage, to publication?
Yeah, look, this has been a project of quite extraordinary scale. So the leak of documents that we've received is significant. It is probably the biggest leak of documents from within BHP, certainly that I can remember. And it's given us really an extraordinary insight into the way BHP is tackling this critical question of decarbonisation and reducing its emissions. So it's been weeks and weeks and weeks of just trying to understand, you know, what do these documents say? What do they tell us about what BHP is doing, what it's not doing? The investigative process has been extremely involved. It's been a difficult project, but I think a really important one.
Let's talk about what these documents have revealed. What did they show you, Chris?
Yeah, look, I think at their most simplistic, what they tell us is that BHP has effectively put the brakes on its decarbonisation plans. And that's something that should be of huge interest to every Australian, because we know BHP is a really significant emitter. We know it is, of course, the world's biggest mining company. And we know that it had set out some really bold climate action targets.
Mm.
And what these documents show is that recently things have slowed down dramatically. So what we're talking about is them pushing out the rollout of battery electric trucks and rail, which address its biggest source of emission. It's putting off huge renewables projects, those being pushed off into the never never. And we're talking about BHP doing this while knowing internally that decarbonisation was critical for its social licence to operate, and that if it didn't do things urgently, it was going to take a really big reputational hit. So it's really an extraordinary insight into what has been happening within BHP.
In 2019, the then CEO of BHP, Andrew Mackenzie, made headlines when he said that, you know, fossil fuels posed an existential risk and that action, a global action was required, a global mobilization was required, including from heavy emitters and the resources industry. Fast forward to 2025, could you tell me about the memo that was circulated to senior executives at BHP, and what did it say?
Yeah, I mean, look, the shift in language between 2025 and that speech in 2019 is just extraordinary. So just to go back to 2019 for a second, I mean, that was an extraordinary speech. That was one of the most powerful corporate leaders in the world saying effectively that the world faced an existential risk if we didn't get ourselves off of this dependence on fossil fuels. You know, this was a company that historically has played a huge role in emitting CO2, saying we must act urgently or species, entire species are going to be wiped out. And you fast forward 6 years, so not a great deal of time. Andrew McKenzie has left the company. And then this memo gets passed around executives within Australia, and it's talking about the decarbonisation plans for BHP's Pilbara operations. So it's West Australian iron ore operations, which is a huge part of the company's presence in Australia and a really significant source of BHP's global emissions. The urgency is gone from that memo. So they suddenly saying, well, actually the plan that we have to hit net zero goal by 2050 isn't really going to work. We don't have this sort of urgency around sourcing renewables anymore. It then kind of goes about this process of scenario planning is the way that they describe it, where they lay out a set of options for how BHP could delay key climate investments. So maybe we could start this rollout in 2035 or 2040, or maybe we could do nothing at all. And it's really telling because in discussing these options, BHP are saying things like, well, if we do delay this, we're going to have to engage in a PR campaign and we're going to have to adjust the targets that we've already set. We may risk not hitting our targets at all in terms of emissions reduction. And so it's this memo that I guess is really kind of like a walk back memo or a slowdown memo, where this urgency, all of this urgency around decarbonisation and emissions reduction, you know, the balloon is popped and the air is going out of it.
Chris, you mentioned the Pilbara. What are some of the projects, the decarbonisation projects, that BHP has delayed or abandoned in WA? And what would they have achieved had they gone ahead?
So one of the projects was what BHP described as its first investment step in terms of decarbonisation. So the very first thing it was going to do in trying to hit its emissions reductions goals, that was to build a 50-megawatt solar farm near its Jimblebar open cut mine in the Pilbara. The board had approved that project. It had been funded. There was a lot of excitement around it. They were saying things like, you know, this is the first step in our decarbonisation journey it's critical that we urgently decarbonize because the shareholders expected of us, governments expected of us, and it effectively underpins our social license to operate. So there's all this sort of urgency around it. And then quite quickly, that project is closed off and it's rolled into another renewables project, which itself has no funding until, you know, 2031 at the very earliest. So the delay is significant, and it caused some internal angst within the company. People were questioning why on earth that project had been closed, and particularly given it had board approval. And then the second project, that renewables project that we've looked at, is a huge 500 megawatt system of solar, wind and battery that was going to power quite a significant proportion of all of BHP's inland WA operations. That project was supposed to begin delivering power in 2027-28, so not very long away at all. But the documents that we've seen show that as recently as last year, that project updates were saying, well, this isn't going to proceed in its current form and there's no funding assigned to this at all until at least 2031. So these two projects together, it's hard to kind of get your head around the scale of it, but just a 500 megawatt renewable system in and of itself, that's enough to power a small city. I mean, that's enough to power at least 150,000 homes, a huge, huge delivery of renewable energy that was going to kind of transform the energy grid that BHP relies on for its operations, which is currently powered by highly polluting diesel and gas. That was going to be this huge shift, and it was going to really allow BHP to then transition away from diesel trucks, which are a really massive pollution source for BHP, and move to electric trucks. It was also going to allow it to start moving towards electric rail. Both of those transitions, so the transitions to electric trucks and to electric rail, have also been now massively delayed. You take all this together and you say, okay, well, what actual on-the-ground action is BHP taking on its decarbonisation promises in the Pilbara? And it's very hard to see anything other than some trials and some early studies.
So this means millions of tons of additional pollution will go into the atmosphere. Given the size and the influence of BHP, what does that mean for Australia, for the nation's climate targets?
Yeah, it's a really good question. So we've spoken to quite a number of environmental groups who say, you know, if BHP and the other big miners don't urgently decarbonise, then we are going to really struggle to hit our own national emissions reduction targets. I think that's for two reasons. One is that they are themselves quite big emitters. Their operations release a lot of CO2 into the atmosphere. But also they set the tone. So just the scale and size of BHP as a company, I mean, it's huge, right? What it does really, really matters. So if it decides it wants to buy hundreds of battery electric trucks, equipment manufacturers, like the truck manufacturers, are going to respond to that, and they're going to put all their effort into developing and supplying those trucks because they know BHP is such a massive company. So it has this sort of oversized influence almost in driving climate action, not just by reducing its own emissions, you know, from its own operations, but also just setting that tone, this leadership role that it plays, that environmental campaigners are most concerned about, that this slowing down and this walking back from its decarb plans is going to sort of set the tone across the industry that it's in, but also across broader corporate Australia as well.
How does this sit with shareholders? How do you think this will land with shareholders who have in the past been supportive of accelerating climate action?
Yeah, it's going to be incredibly interesting to see what the reaction of shareholders is. We know there is overwhelming shareholder support for climate action within BHP. So they, back in 2024, they presented what's known as their Climate Transition Action Plan, the CTAP, to shareholders. The shareholders voted 92% in favour of that plan. So that is it. That's a obviously an overwhelming majority. So there really is broad support for climate action among shareholders. So the reaction to, I think, these documents is going to be very interesting to follow.
Mm. How has BHP responded to what this investigation has uncovered, to the leaking of these documents?
Yeah, so BHP has given us a statement saying that they are actually making really good progress on emissions reductions, that they've reduced their emissions by 36% from 2020 levels, which is significant. But they say, look, you know, to get to net zero, which is their goal by 2050, that they are really dependent on technological advancements in trucking and rail. And what they mean by that is that they require a battery electric truck technology that can be deployed at a really significant scale. They say that that just simply isn't there yet, and that that's going to slow them down quite considerably. Mm. It's worth bearing in mind a couple of things when you think about that response. One is that there are, of course, questions about how those emissions have been achieved and whether they have actually come from any changes to the way that they operate that would limit the amount of emissions that they're putting into the atmosphere. And secondly, when it says that the technology for battery electric trucks is not there, that is at odds with one of its main competitors, Fortescue, which has made massive purchases of battery electric trucks. So there is a bit of a conflict between what BHP is saying about the technology and what Fortescue is saying about the technology. But it is worth bearing in mind those points, I think.
We'll be right back. Chris, experts that you've spoken to in this investigation say that this exposes failures in the government's safeguard mechanism, that is a key climate change policy. What are they telling you? What questions does this raise about the effectiveness or the way that that safeguard mechanism is working?
So we've spoken to a climate policy expert at the ANU, Andrew McIntosh, and he says what's happening here with BHP and other big miners really exposes the fundamental weakness of the government's key climate policy, the safeguard mechanism. So what we know is that last year, about half of BHP sites, which are covered by the safeguard mechanism, were above their baseline levels. So they polluted at levels that were above the government-imposed limit that was set on them. The consequence for BHP was that it had to pay back less than $9 million. So for a company of BHP's size and scale, you know, that is peanuts. It's nothing. Andrew McIntosh says, you know, this just shows that there's no incentive for companies like BHP to limit their emissions, that no rational operator, including a company like BHP, would actually act with any urgency in a policy setting like that. They say, you know, the safeguard mechanism really needs to be rethought because if we can't use it as a lever to compel or to force BHP and other big miners into acting on their emissions, then it's essentially not worth the paper that it's written on.
Chris, how do you think this story is going to be received in Canberra? We've known for a long time that fossil fuel companies lobby the government. Your investigation has revealed a bit more about how that works. What can you tell us about how they wield power and political influence?
Yeah, so companies like BHP, I mean, you know, it's the biggest miner in the world, right? It has a lot of resources and it has a lot of resources to deploy at government relations and at influencing public policy. So we know from public records that they have engaged four firms that are on the federal lobbyist register. So that's four third-party lobbyist firms. We don't know exactly what those firms are doing for them because we don't get that level of transparency. We know that they have their own government relations team in-house, and we have zero transparency around the way that they interact with government and ministers. So taking all that together, we know that BHP is able to exert quite a bit of influence on government. So are other big miners and other big corporates. So what do we know? So the safeguard mechanism isn't hitting BHP with any considerable penalty for being above its emissions baselines. We know that they exert a lot of influence and we know that they were really active during the creation of and reforms to the safeguard mechanism. You just kind of come away from that thinking, well, is there a real question about how that policy was created and how much influence BHP and other big miners were able to wield? And has it led to a situation now where BHP feels safe in not acting with considerable urgency on this really pressing problem?
Climate and environmental groups have been for years ringing the alarm about the need to act with more urgency to address the climate crisis. What's their response to what's been uncovered in these leaked documents?
Yeah, I think there was a really telling quote that we had from Annika Reynolds at the ACF. So Annika said, given what we know about the climate crisis and about global heating, delay is as good as denial. If we don't act urgently, then we are not acting in line with what we know about the science of global heating. And I think that's really telling here because what the documents tell us is that material, genuine action on reducing emissions within BHP has been put off as far back as the 2030s, possibly into the 2040s. So when we're talking about global heating and action on climate change, if we're going to hit the targets and we're going to limit global temperature rises, the urgency needs to be there right now.
Chris, it is a huge investigation showing some of the thinking inside one of Australia's largest emitters. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks so much for having me, Noah.
That was Christopher Norse, Chief Investigations Correspondent for Gaia Adam Morton. This episode was produced by Miles Herbert. Sound design and mixing by Joe Koenig. The executive producer of Full Story is Hannah Parks. You can follow and subscribe to Full Story wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a review. We want to hear your feedback. I'm Noor Haidar. Thanks for listening.